information is free.
The law.
There is hope.
When ignorance is converted into knowledge.
Tonight we care.
Appear to border
it shows.
The law.
The country.
You will remember nine you have seen or heard here.
Whether he went on with the diary, or whether he did not cooperate, it made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.
Remember the 5th of November, selections and toner bomb plot. I know of no reason why loss of our freedom should ever be forgot. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to episode 193 of Media Monarchy. It's November 5th, 2010. My name is James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show MediaMonarchy.com, your source for alternative news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups. This week, we watch the world argue with itself, post-mortem, toner terror, guns and weed in prison stocks in the return to Jekyll Island, auto propaganda, star whackers, and a fortnight full of data mining media. All that, so much more, jam-packed November 5th, 2010, episode 193 of MediaMonarchy.com.
Watch the world argue, argue with itself.
Going all the way back to 1984 from their record The Swing, that's the one and only NXS, Dancing on the Jetty. I gotta tell you, they've always been one of my all-time favorite bands, going back to being essentially a little kid in middle school. And if you told me then that I'd be able to pull that love from the past into the present right here and be able to bring it to all the folks out there, the growing hundreds and now even thousands of folks who are joining us here on MediaMonarchy.com. My name's James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show Media Monarchy, your source for alternative news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups, all that and so much more. Just feeling like I was dragging a little bit. Went to the dentist again the other day. I feel like I've been punched in the face a few times. But then hearing that music and listening to that whole song jazzed me up. And so I'm stoked. And there's tons to go over. Last week, as you may recall, we had Clyde Lewis in studio with us. So I didn't get to go over the news in my usual obsessive fashion. So we're going to do it here, and we're going to do it double time, my friends. But first, we are, of course, broadcasting live, as always, from the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org, live every Friday morning at 10 a.m. Pacific Time and blasting out worldwide thanks to ZeroPointRadio.com simulcast. And they kick it out on 92.3 FM and 1670 AM in Casper, Wyoming. We have the worldwide home of free speech, revereradio.net, down in America's Wang in sunny Florida. Huge thanks to Rob Revere and all those guys. They were the first other station to pick up Media Monarchy back in 2005? No, six. Sorry. Free Radio Olympia, frolympia.org, berkeleyliberationradio.net, oneskyradio.com, 89.9 Patriot Radio in La Mesa, Texas. I also forget to tell you sometimes that CJSF.ca rebroadcast the audio from my weekly video series with James Corbett at CorbettReport.com. NewWorldNextWeek.com. You can go there and you can grab the audio. You can grab the high quality video, lower quality. We have captions, for the love of God. Doing anything we can to bring you this message and this open source data mining intelligence for you. It's all public domain. We just try to give you a little more context here and lay out the path for you to go do more research. And again, come back to the cave and tell us about the shadows on the wall. We're all learning as we go. You can, of course, make contact, Face, Twitter, Tube, Ustream, Blip, Cafe Press, where, of course, you can get a fine Media Monarchy t-shirt, organic, made in America. CafePress.com/Media Monarchy. And as we mentioned, YouTube, we've now broken over 1,000 subscribers on YouTube.com/Media Monarchy. Huge thanks. It's a little daunting. And again, MediaMonarchy@gmail.com, Skype, Instant Messenger, iTunes, RadioForAll.net, Archive.org, all those things. Media Monarchy as your keyword or username. Huge thanks to the folks who have donated. Their donations help keep Media Monarchy going. Alan in Omaha, Remy Roy in Canada, and also Alan in Alabama. I'll be shipping off to Alabama the 2020 Hindsight DVD exclusive from Richard Andrew Grove of TragedyAndHope.com. And that's all my notes. We've got so much to go over. Let's get to it. And we always like to look at the breaking news. And of course, we're in one of those cycles. We're in one of those cycles where there seems to be something going on. Something's happening here, as the song would say. And what it is, we're not exactly clear. There's the constant ratcheting of the air drama. For the last 9 years, it ebbs and flows, and we've just been in a massive one seemingly through all 2010, kicked off by the false flag drill gone live of the underwear bomber and his well-dressed handler. We have another issue with a Qantas 747 plane returns to Singapore after engine problem. We're going to get to some of those other things related to all the latest air drama going on as we plow through all the unbelievable news for you here on this episode 193. Obama begins Asian economic trip. Seemingly a lot of eyes there. Getting a lot of attention. And, of course, the accusation being jumping the ship while America's going down. Republicans to attack healthcare law funding. Those are the three big stories I see in front of me on Google News at 10:12 a.m. Friday, November 5th, 2010. And, of course, remember the 5th of November. And we're here. Something interesting I saw earlier this morning, and it's not posted to the site yet, but I grabbed it and I saved a PDF because you never know when stories might change and disappear. NASA's Glenn Research Center in Cleveland, Ohio, was placed on lockdown this morning after reports of a gunman in one of the buildings. Catherine Martin, spokeswoman for NASA's Glenn Research Center, initially said the incident began just after 9:30 a.m. We're looking into unverified reports of possible activity involving a gun, she said. WEWS-TV in Cleveland reported that gunshots had been fired inside Building 77, injuring at least one person, but later officials said that the entire situation was part of a security drill. Police said that a NASA employee at one of the buildings had received an automated security call saying there was a man with a gun at the complex, but did not hear the message saying it was only a drill. Is this real world, or is this exercise? I've never seen so much real world activity during a drill. We will, of course, keep checking back on Google News. And, of course, last week when Clyde Lewis was in with us, we saw some of the events unfolding. The toner terror that we will get to in just a few minutes. But again, this is a super packed episode, so we're going over more than a week's worth of news, and hopefully we can get through all of it and it'll make some kind of contextual, subtextual sense to you. We'll start off with Kenny Sideshow. Rallies have always been used to manipulate the masses, and he begins with a correlation from the 1988 film They Live, which is admittedly quite cornball, but also is fantastic in its imagery and message. And we get to the rally. The lefty counterpart to the righty Glenn Beck hijacked Tea Party types. The lefties may be a little more fun, but no less propagandizing. It's breaking us down into two groups that oppose each other as if that's all there is. But most of us don't actually fit into this false duplicity. We're the ones who don't like Stewart or Obama, Beck and Palin, any of them. Using conventional terms, we as individuals are a mix of conservative, liberal, moderate, radical, or whatever you want to call it, sort of mongrels that don't fit what the media wants us to be. A real rally for America would be anti-war, anti-imperialism, and most definitely anti-criminal government and anti-Wall Street bankster syndicate. Basically, it would be looking for the truth wherever it leads us. We haven't seen much of that in these controlled-for-TV gatherings. Rallies have always been used to manipulate the masses. The crowd cheers hooray for us and go home satiated. A lot of good people want to be involved. A lot of good people fall for the deceptions. Now, myself, as well as James Corbin on NewWorldNextWeek.com and all the comments on the YouTube channel, being taken to task seemingly more and more as time goes by. But a lot of it is very unconstructive, and I want to take a moment to acknowledge some constructive and excellent commenting and criticism from a longtime friend. Posted the comment to this on the rallies have always been used to manipulate the masses, and he writes, "Have you watched Jon Stewart's closing remarks to the rally, the moment of sincerity? If you haven't, I highly recommend it. I hear what I think you're saying, that what this rally's doing is counterproductive and adds to people's complacency and indifference just when we need people to not be complacent and indifferent. But I think to stop there misses the point. First and foremost, they're having a laugh at the expense of a lot of clowns who deserve to be laughed at. In the process, they're hopefully pointing out some hypocrisies. Whether they were successful is certainly up for debate, but I'd hope you'd agree that such satire is a valid form of social criticism. I've heard a lot of people condemning the rallies, making fun of people who are angry at the establishment and taking to the streets. I don't think that's accurate, and Stewart directly addressed that in this closing. Just like you, I think his main point is that the media is lying to us and trying to divide us by scaring us and making us enemies of one another. He says at one point, quote, we're living in hard times, not end times, and I think that's an apt statement for what's going on right now. You know that our leadership loves to have us scared. It sells us and keeps things simple. What Stewart's saying, I think, is that is not that we should be angry. We totally should, just not at each other the way our leadership seemed to want. Thank you, my friend, John G. And again, I don't want to ever be so closed off and so pumped up on my radio muscles here in my little controlled booth that I would never listen and take to heart constructive criticism. Not the idiotic criticism about how I shave or what funny things my hair's doing. So let's get to Selection Day 2010. Voting for a restraining order. I believe that was PJ O'Rourke who initially said that this is an election. This is a restraining order. But let's get the real from Mike Whitney. This is coming from Global Research. Obama rode into office in January 09 on a wave of optimism. By the time the ballots were counted in Tuesday's midterm elections, Obama's personal approval ratings will have fallen to historic lows, and he will be universally recognized as the man who brought ruin on the Democratic Party. While still popular among party loyalists, the president has become radioactive among independents, the critical group of swing voters who have fled Camp Obama en masse, frustrated with both the lack of audacity and/or change. No one figured they were electing Bush to a third term when they cast their vote for that inspiring senator from Illinois 2 years ago, but that's what they got. To say that supporters are disappointed in Obama's performance is a gross understatement of the pessimism that's spread like kudzu among the party faithful. People have become increasingly cynical as they realize that neither party provides a path to real structural change. The system is broken. Obama has merely exposed the rot at the heart of American democracy. That piece from Mike Whitney goes on. We also have a related one from LouRockwell.com, why I don't trust the Tea Party. Again, further distancing ourselves from the left-right paradigm as much as we can. And then we have all the massive post-mortem updates, again, as we refer to it on the latest episode of NewWorldNextWeek.com. Obama seeks compromise after Democrats' midterm losses. That's from The Guardian. And I thought it was interesting that some folks that I did talk to about their attending the rally is that it wasn't political. Of course it's not political, because your guy's in. Your team has the ball. So you don't want to criticize all the things. Now you're going to tacitly go along with it. Just as all of those who are now angry and want to take our country back were tacitly going along with everything from the previous criminal puppet administration. And there were quite a bit of bad notes. Alan Grayson out of Florida lost his seat. We wonder if Harry Reid stole his back. Rand Paul promises to challenge the GOP establishment, and we shall see. You can watch that interview on CNN from election night. And I believe I misread this on NewWorldNextWeek.com. Reports of voter intimidation and voter fraud scarce on election day. That's the Minnesotan Independent. Civil liberties watchdog Feingold loses his Senate seat, the only guy to vote against the Patriot Act. And again, as I hear my neighbor mutter about, oh, this country's going to hell because all the GOP got back in. Oh, no, the GOP got in. Now who will end all the wars and repeal the Patriot Act and stop spying on everybody? Because the Democrats, oh, God, they were so close to doing it, right? They were going to investigate Bush and try them for war crimes, all those things. Oh, and now it's just all halted, right? BS. AllGov.com breaking down where we stand ethnically, 100 senators. 0 African Americans, 0 Mexican Americans, and 2 Asian Americans from Hawaii. And it just gets worse. Californians said no to legal pot, but yes, of course, to pot taxes. They want the dough. Measure 74 was turned down here in Oregon. Pot the vote, indeed. I would have taken it if I was voting in California, as an extreme honor to vote on something to legalize marijuana. But there's a lot of politics and a lot of garbage getting in the way. And again, you know where we stand here. I would gladly take industrial hemp back for paper and food and car and everything. Do that at least. William Blum of KillingHope.org breaks down John Stewart and the left quite well. KillingHope.org offers, basically, I believe William Blum puts up a big post probably once a month, and there are a few different articles contained therein, so I highly recommend subscribing because you'll never think to check back each month. And then to my home state of West Virginia. Again, my friends, this past week is pretty much fifth anniversary of moving here to Portland, Oregon from Shepherdstown, West Virginia. The last week or so also saw, which I didn't mention last week with Clyde, the four-year anniversary of Media Monarchy on the air. Joe Manchin, when in West Virginia, helped keep Senate in Democratic control. That came down to be kind of a pivotal role, and I wonder, and I have a bit of conflict. In the one way, I would always say I vote for third party, always vote for third party, but then in the other way, when I look at this guy and what it meant for the state, and I know looking at conversations again from friends who are still back in Jefferson County, that you kind of had to pick Manchin over Racy, the GOP well-funded guy from Florida, essentially. So, of course, I can say all well and good when it doesn't actually concern my home state. We'll have to work on that. We also have Postmortem Part 2, more and more and more. InformationLiberation.com going over that old trope and updating it. You can't complain if you did vote. And this goes along with friends that I talked to. And again, you heard Clyde say last week, he doesn't vote. I talked to a friend at work this past week, and he doesn't vote. I tried to tell him that it's at least worth it to get in for the local bits. Those are the things that are going to affect you. Those are the things you need to be involved with. Somebody's going to take control, unfortunately. Pre-selection, 65% favored getting rid of entire Congress and starting over. I believe that goes back to Rasmussen, but again, nobody votes that way. Alternate on pot prohibition as the cornerstone of a police state. All the other around-the-world election notes, Christian conservative voters turn out big on election night because, again, their side is energized. Because their team's not winning. Their team doesn't have the ball. And the system continues. Evidence of an election stolen in California. More on that from markcrispinmiller.com. Analysis shows that, of course, bigger Twitter and Facebook flock boost your election odds. You can even download a spreadsheet to look at, suss out the numbers. Again, about Joe Manchin, Washington Post now reporting West Virginian a wild card for Democrats. I'd love to think that somehow Joe Manchin would go to Washington and get in the Senate and really agitate for real change. I'd love to see that come from West Virginia. In the wars, grow more pot. Obama ordered to release names of clemency seekers. More on that from Threat Level. White House orders standard practices on unclassified info. Yes, another executive order emanating from His Majesty, who wears no clothes and is named Barry Satoru. And here's the story that's gotten a lot of legs. And I believe I just saw something on the breaking news that breaks this down a little more. But here's what I have posted. U.S. to spend $200 million a day on Obama's Mumbai visit. That's out of India from NDTV.com. Taxpayers to pay nearly $1 billion for Emperor's visit to Mumbai. The other articles are saying this came from one unnamed source out of India, and it blew up and took off. However, my friends, the White House is, of course, not saying how much the Obama-Saya trip is going to cost. And tie this in with other drills and other speculation about November 6th and the 34 ships accompanying Obama, and you find yourself, again, in another odd swirl of events, the perfect storm that all comes together. We'll take another comment at the end of this restraining order post from Charles D., where he notes he likes what Chris Floyd has to say on this. The people sense that something's badly wrong, but no one in the system will tell them that it is the system itself that's wrong. Instead, we get these circuses and shams, these diversions and delusions that pass for election campaigns, throwing up a blizzard of false issues and partisan posturing, sound and fury, signifying nothing. Then when it's all over, it's back to business as usual for our bipartisan courtiers, feasting on the bloody swill of empire. So we'll move from selections, postmortem, and again, it will weave its way through the rest of this episode 193, as we're doing a supersized two episodes worth. As was breaking last week with Clyde Lewis of GroundZeroMedia.org in the studio with us, we saw it bubbling up, and yet again, you can see these things turn into events, the event, if you will. I was having a conversation with someone at work, and again, that's what's great about using the social networking portals that everybody's on. I basically use it to try and spread information. So fortunately, I get folks coming up saying, what was that post about printer bombs or something? So I was able to break it down quickly and say that now you should always be suspicious when these things turn into events that get their own logos and music and the news switches into 24/7. Manufactured toner bomb hysteria to revive Obama's war of terror. Lee Rogers of RogueGovernment.com breaks down the toner terror threatiganda being pushed by Western powers, but we'll take the text from Kurt Nimmo. Once again, according to the government and compliant corporate media, Muslim cave dwellers are attempting to kill us because they hate our freedom. Last week, the airwaves and internet were besieged with a fabulous story of al-Qaeda miscreants in Yemen attempting to send toner cartridge bombs to synagogues in Chicago. The packages from Yemen contain chemical explosives camouflaged as printer cartridges and wire to be detonated by a cell phone and were found in Dubai and England on Friday only after the U.S. received a tip from Saudi Arabia. Thus reported the LA Times. In response, of course, bureaucrats said we'll have to get used to more obtrusive airport pat-downs and screening of incoming foreign parcels using a network of government-certified private screeners and companies, as well as its own inspectors at about 18 gateway airports around the country. That, according to the TSA, terror is a growth industry, undoubtedly. But if we wait a minute, there's a problem with all of this. And as usual, the government has not done a very good job of making the latest al-CIA to plot credible, at least not for people who bother to pay attention. According to Mohammed al-Shabah, air cargo director for Yemenia Airways, quote, there is no evidence to prove that this package came through Yemen, end quote. He said there were no UPS or DHL cargo flights from Yemen within a 48-hour period prior to the supposed terror attack. Naturally, using a new search on Mohammed al-Shabaab produced no results from the usual suspects of the corporate mockingbird media. Never mind, nothing to see here. Please move along. If you follow the links contained within this story, you'll get videos, you'll get Yemen Post, you'll get Of Goats and Men, you'll get National Terror Alert, you'll get CBS, InfoWars, again, RogueGovernment.com. You'll see how this story developed that initially started out of authorities saying, well, this is no big deal. But, of course, Obama wasted no time calling a press conference and saying, boogie boogie, just like Bush did. A little pre-election psyops, methinks. We'll take the clip that'll break down the toner paranoia as well as the groping, the DNA-destroying naked body scanners, or we will molest you. will literally have you by the balls. And when you're taking all of this in, we want you to remember, you're more likely to die by cop than by terror.
You're watching Breaking News from WCCO.
Hello, I'm Mike Binkley. Thanks for joining us today. We're actually following a couple of breaking stories right now. The first involves UPS cargo planes being swept for explosives in Philadelphia, Newark, and London, perhaps in New York as well. This is a look at Philadelphia right here. The planes have all been moved to remote locations so law enforcement officials can safely investigate. Now, what started this all was in the UK, officials found a toner cartridge with wires and powder during a routine screening earlier today. That package reportedly came from Yemen, and that caused an alert for other planes, especially here in the U.S. Recent intelligence reports have pointed to cargo planes as a possible terror target. Now, Holly Wagner is live at our airport, and Holly, first of all, I know you've talked with officials here about what's happening in these other airports.
Yeah, I just spoke with Patrick Hogan with the airport here. He tells me there is nothing unusual or out of the ordinary going on at our airport. We've been here for a majority of the morning, Mike, and we haven't seen anything out of the ordinary. I also put a phone call in to TSA. They are the ones that handle cargo here at Minneapolis-St. Paul International, and we're waiting for a call back from them.
All right, but in the meantime, security was already changing today at airports around the country, specifically with the pat-downs, and that's been controversial, yeah, as I know you've seen.
Yes, and it is, for some people, a bit uncomfortable. We've seen several people here at the airport go through this new pat-down technique. And what's different about it is instead of using the back of the hand, what they're doing is they're using the front of the hand and sliding it on parts of the body. We want to show you exactly how this has changed. And they're going over parts of the body, including the inner thighs, the chest area, among others, that some people have said makes them uncomfortable. According to TSA, they're using this pat-down method when somebody sets off the metal detector or if they opt out of a body scan. And they're doing this, they say, to detect dangerous items and also anything that might be hidden as far as an explosive. According to TSA, the person that would do the pat-down would be the same sex as the passenger. We did have a chance to talk to men and women about this today, and some like the safety aspect of this, and others feel it's intrusive.
Personally, it makes me feel safe and like knowing that they're going to be actually checking stuff like that. I've gone in sporting events where I've wondered, like, you know, what if somebody had something in their coat or something like that. So, you know, I think for me, I'd be fine with it. But if I was a young lady, I don't know how I would feel about it.
I wouldn't want it. I wouldn't want that done at all. I think that's ridiculous. I would rather be scanned.
I think it should be the last method used. You know, I think they should use every other method, like full body scan or whatever else, if they need to.
Back out here live at MSP International, we have watched several people go through or get this new pat-down technique done to them. Here's what I can tell you about it. It's done out in the open. We have seen people of the same sex doing the pat-down on the passengers. And we've also noticed that it's very hands-on. And, Mike, I can see why some people say that they would feel uncomfortable with this. I watched the guy stand there as the TSA worker put his hand right next to his inner thigh and go all the way down. So you can certainly understand why some people may feel that this is intrusive.
Yeah, and we were wondering if it would be out in the open like that. You said you were able to watch.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, once again, planes have been swept for possible explosives in Philadelphia, Newark, New Jersey, New York, and London. So far, just one suspicious package found in the UK. We're waiting for word on the ones here in the U.S., and we'll, of course, continue to track.
We'll continue to track the fact that the audio you just listened only gives you a slight inkling of the bizarre nature of that WCCO clip. The very attractive woman who's on location seems legitimately excited by what's going on. It's bizarre. And, of course, it's just another clip where we hear people say, oh, if it makes me safe. Of course, none of these things have ever found anything. But the underwear bomber can get through because, of course, he's part of an intelligence drill gone live. Related toner terror updates. Pentagon denies report of plan for U.S. military teams in Yemen. That's from voanews.com. However, we know quite well, and you can get it from counterpunch.org, that we have been provoking and provocateuring Yemeni terrorism for about 10 years. Going back even to good old Bill Clinton. Bomb's tip-off came from former Al-Qaeda member And you should know that Al-Qaeda means the base, the database of Mujahideen fighters that the intelligence networks use for double, triple agent, false flag, black ops. Toner bomb results in more airport molestation. They want to make you choose the scanner. Well, I don't want to get molested by some goon. I'll just go through the naked body scanner that destroys my DNA. Slow kill. TSA starts new pat-down procedure with controversy. An interesting note, and we take it from roguegovernment.com. However, its sources, right back to Ynet News, Israel had been on bomb alert since Thursday, October 28th, the day before Toner Terror. They had been warned, they said, Minister Katz. U.S. feared mail bomb plot was coming. Saw a September dry run. That's coming from nationalterroralert.com. Which reminds me, I should check and see if they've defriended me on Facebook for asking too many uncomfortable questions about all the latest threataganda they post about. Qantas Airbus A380 made emergency landing in Singapore after engine fails. Then, yesterday, another mid-air drama for Qantas as a passenger suffered a heart attack. And now we have the latest event that was on the top of Google News. That's now shifted down. 2 years later, Mumbai terror attacks still cast shadows. They're now pimping, of course, because Barry Satoru is landing. 68 to be believed killed in a Cuban plane crash. And we close out all this air drama, and we'll just tell you about it. And again, you got to go check it out yourself, and you have to see the photos. Man in disguise boards international flight. If you see the photos, he looked like an elderly man. It's something straight out of ILM or something. He got on the flight, then he went in the bathroom, ripped the makeup off. He's a young Asian guy. I believe the story is he wants refugee status. But another fascinating story that again shows the incompetence angle. That, oh gosh, we just can't seem to catch these things. Give us more control. Give us more power. Next time we won't screw up, we swear. Now what we're going to do is shift into 2 weeks worth of news purge. If you think one's unbelievable enough, let's put two together. Last week's, the 1028 news purge, we called Red Right Hand. That was our opening track last week, cover the Nick Cave song from Arctic Monkeys. This week's called Watch the World Argue with Itself, taken from our opening track from NXS, Dancing on the Jetty, for the 11-4 news purge. We're going to smush them together and put all those updates together and, again, blast through all this. And we'll take it from 9/11 updates. And we'll note that buildingwhat.org and their television ad aired all over New York City on Election Day, getting people to ask the question, building what? Building 7. John Hankey has a new project, 9/11 blogger, getting into it on 9/11 and the JFK connection. Of course, John Hankey is the director of JFK 2, the Bush connection, as well as the assassination of JFK Jr. His new project is thedarklegacy.com. And again, as CorbettReport.com noted just a few weeks ago, if you've not seen JFK 2, the Bush connection, you must. It takes pretty much just from 63 to the new millennium. Redacted News. As I get redacted. Redacted News reporting on 911blogger.com being accused of working for the other side. This ties in with their battles with the CIT, the Citizen Investigation Team. And I'll just reiterate that I don't feel like we have time to argue with other folks in the independent alternative media. If you don't like people's work, maybe just don't talk about it. Maybe that doesn't work. Maybe I'm being Pollyannish. But I don't think we have time to attack each other. Roseanne Barr comes out bigger and louder for 9/11 Truth. And we get that seemingly keeps coming out of this massive FOIA data dump from International Center for 9/11 Studies. And you can check all these out at youtube.com/IC9/11Studies. New uncovered 9/11 footage shows FBI director asking firefighters about secondary hits on the World Trade Center. Chomsky admits no evidence Al-Qaeda carried out 9/11. That is from Press TV, and it just seems like it's just kind of a quick mention. However, we want to remind folks he's come out quite vehemently against those crazy 9/11 conspiracy theorists. But as we note, 9/11 Truth ends wars, ends the left-right paradigm. ActivistPost.com calling out so-called alternative media sites who aren't covering 9/11 news. Kevin Ryan has a new piece on 9/11 and the national debt. Again, we just can't afford this. And company accuses medical examiner's office of stealing 9/11 secrets. That fascinating story straight out of Manhattan from CBS. And there you have all the latest 9/11 updates. As I've said a ton of times, we don't really have time anymore to do these stories justice as we're just swimming in a mass amount of information. So hopefully I can read it on the record, I can lay it out for you, and when you hear things that interest you or seem to be a piece or seem to be an avenue worth exploring, we can all go do that on our own. But I must admit, the pace of this gets to be a little daunting as I think of ways to keep growing the monarchy, however lessening the massive workload in a number of ways on myself. So again, if you want to help out in some way that you think you can, mediamonarchy@gmail.com. But we'll get into BioWars and EnviroHealth, taking it from Washington's blog first. The reappearance of huge oil plumes makes it really hard to pretend that the Gulf oil spill has disappeared. Allegheny County opening a new bioterror lab. So let's see how long it is before, whoops, something got out. Maybe I've just been watching too many zombie films. Quadruple dose seasonal flu super vaccine now being aggressively pushed on to senior citizens. Oh, I feel bad for the young folks having to wear their shirts at Walgreens. It's just like, get your shot. I can give you your shot. Get your mercury. Get your squalene here. Glaxo to pay $750 million over tainted and ineffective drugs. United Nations urged to freeze geoengineering projects. That's from Reuters, and we reported that to you from the alternative media first 2 weeks ago. Nations agreeing to stop geoengineering. That's the chemtrails in the sky. I had someone posting to facebook.com/mediamonarchy about the amazing chemtrails they saw over the San Francisco Bay Area this weekend. Of course, when the Giants were coming home for their big ticker tape parade from winning the Super Bowl World Series. When they're large crowds. They are spraying. So what in the world are they spraying? The other update from etcgroup.org. United Nations Convention on Biological Diversity bans geoengineering. And the question I just asked, what in the world are they spraying, is the title of a new documentary. You can watch it now in its entirety on YouTube. We have it linked up. And of course, in situations like this, we always ask you to buy a DVD and then make copies of that to support the filmmakers or the artists or the writers. So Washington Blaw got into the huge plumes of oil, making it hard to, you know, imagine that the Gulf oil spill's gone. But Natural News gets into the Gulf being, of course, still loaded with chemicals. But, of course, the FDA says seafood is safe to eat. EPA said the air was safe to breathe. Halliburton knew cement used in failed Gulf well was unstable. Panel finds. More on that from Bloomberg. Giant sinkhole opens in Germany. That's from CNN. Natural News again asking the question, will U.S. Patent Office end gene patent enslavement of the human race? Again, our very genome being bought up by organizations like International Business Machines so they can implement their final solutions of eugenics agenda. That is the real religion of the inbred oligarch Western finance elites, the multi-generational serial killers. Good news from BioPrepWatch.com. More than 5 million pounds of chemical agent destroyed at Umatilla. That is in eastern Oregon, just a few hours away from me. That would be an interesting interview. Yeah. But we watch what they say. However, we try not to listen too much to the things that they say. We want to listen and watch what they do. Head of MI6 warns of biological chemical weapons. Israel prepares for biological chemical attacks. And as we just told you a few minutes ago, Israel went on alert day before the toner bomb terror. So when they talk, people should probably listen. We'll go over the drug war, which of course continues to rage. Straight out of TV, my friends. U.S. Border Police find an 1,800-foot-long drug tunnel connecting California to Mexico. Mexifornia, if you will. Sounds like something I saw on a television show called Weeds. Zach Galifianakis, actor, comedian, got a lot of headlines when he lit up a joint in solidarity with Prop 19 on Bill Maher's Real Time on HBO. But of course, like most things in the media, it was a fake stunt, and it was a prop. But let's expand this, and we'll take the trailer from the hopefully forthcoming movie, The Road to Freedom, GunsAndWeed.com.
Some of the first weapon restriction laws in the United States were passed in the South in the 1870s as response to the freeing of recently enslaved African Americans.
Since time began, tyrants have taken aim at personal liberties. Now there's a movie that aims back.
The government has no more right to tell us what to put in our bodies than they have to take our guns or tell us what books we can read.
I wonder how prohibitionists would feel if they saw medical marijuana vastly improve the life of someone dear to them.
Today, many cops who enforce pot laws do so only because it provides them with cushy jobs, good benefits, and a chance to push people around.
I was an undercover narcotics officer. The drug war is nothing but a farce.
At one store, I get a high point. 9 milli, papers for my joint, and a pack of fillies. Yes, I'm feeling very honored. But if the world were truly free, I could also buy my marijuana. It finds the very thought of. In fact, take a look at this. Who's my sack? Test my cigarettes. Am I trespassing? I said only take my seat. It's red. Fan goes on getting something, and the sheet is popping. Now shoot your dog, man. With the pussy to
there's no longer the shady behind the back alley, hand a bag over, hand some cash over. Now it's open. We're here.
We have three of our signature strains. This is all being raffled away the day before Halloween. So someone's going to have one of the best Halloweens of their life.
Six drug police were eaten by bears while raiding a marijuana farm.
On your knees, you dirty hippies!
Jesus.
On your knees!
What's the problem, officer?
We have abdicated ownership of our own bodies and lives. And it doesn't make any difference at all whether that's guns or marijuana or automobiles or our marriages.
The Second Amendment says you got to keep you and your gat intact.
Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. A film by Michael W. Dean and Nima Vadadi. Coming as soon as we can find someone cool enough to distribute it.
GunsAndWeed.com. There you have it. If you're for personal liberties, you got to be for all of it. Now, we'll take a sidebar here for an individual different post that, again, we didn't have time to hit last week on episode 192. From Raw Story, and I had someone comment when this story got posted on Facebook.com/Media Monarchy that's a bunch of crap. And I said, oh, is it a bunch of crap, too, that Noriega trained at Fort Benning? Silence. However, in this case, Mexican cartel's founding members trained at Fort Bragg. The U.S. may have inadvertently taught one of Mexico's most notorious drug cartels advanced military tactics. Whoops. Incompetent accident, I'm sure. In the early 1990s, members of an elite Mexican military squad were trained at Fort Bragg, North Carolina, in counterinsurgency and counter-narcotics techniques. Ironically, somewhere between 30 and 200 of the approximately 500 Mexican soldiers who trained there went on to form the Los Zetas drug cartel. This sourcing back to a large report from Al Jazeera. Craig Deere, whom Al Jazeera describes as, quote, a former U.S. Special Operations Commander, told the news network that the Mexican soldiers, quote, were given map reading courses, communications, standard special forces training, light to heavy weapons, machine guns, and automatic weapons. We create enemies and boogeymen to justify the growth of the eugenics-inspired military-media-industrial complex. That's how it works. As we said time and time again, if you left people to their own devices, we want life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Wouldn't be blowing people up and fighting wars. We just want to live and love. But our misleaders create the chaos to generate the order that they want. And you can call it the Hegelian dialectic, false flag operations, call it what you want. Here it is laid quite bare. Related update from narconews.com. U.S. military unit tied to new anti-narcotics program in Juarez. If the name Juarez sounds familiar, it's because people are constantly being killed by militarized drug gangs. A military unit created in 2002 for quote-unquote homeland defense missions called U.S. Northern Command, NORTHCOM, had become more involved in assisting the Mexican military to wage the drug war. Now more information has come to light connecting the unit to a pilot program in the border city of Ciudad Juarez, which has become one of the deadliest cities in Mexico due to drug-related violence. And grab a story from Diario. U.S. intelligence consultants arrived to Ciudad Juarez. Again, more on this from narconews.com. We create Al-Qaeda. We create the Liberty City 7 or whatever liquid bomb plot crews. We infiltrate, we provocateur, we fund, and we train. And then we trump up the bust. But sometimes the left hand doesn't know what the right hand's doing, and sometimes the red team makes it through in a drill gone live in the compartmentalized intelligence world. And of course, our flashback going all the way back to July of 2007 on MediaMonarchy.com, gangs spreading in the military. Again, in this report about Mexican cartels' founding members trained at Fort Bragg, you can click the Fort Bragg link and go to historycommons.org on their complete 9/11 timeline and see connections to Fort Bragg and the official conspiracy theory of 9/11. Now it's time for Econo Crash. CNBC.com reporting insider selling volume at highest level ever tracked. Fabian Society's London School of Economics predicts savage austerity for the U.S. The Economic Collapse blog has another list for you. 30 reasons why people should be getting really nervous about the state of the U.S. economy. And this clip and story we were going to hit last week from CBS News, 99 weeks when unemployment benefits run out.
The economic jam we're in has topped even the Great Depression in one respect. Never have we had a recession this deep with a recovery this flat. Unemployment has been at 9.5% or above for 14 months. Congress did something that it's never done before. It extended unemployment benefits to 99 weeks. That cost more than $100 billion, a huge expense for a government in debt. But now, for many Americans, 99 weeks have passed and there is still no job in sight. Some have taken to calling themselves the 99ers. We went to several communities in search of the 99ers, but we didn't expect to find such a crisis in Silicon Valley, the high-tech capital that many people hoped would be creating jobs. If you want to understand why the economy is stalled, come to San Jose, California, and talk with 99ers like Marianne Rose.
I remember it coming close to, like, 6 months. I was saying, I can't believe I'm out of work this long. Then the year mark hit. And I just started just panicking, seriously. Now that it's over 2 years, I can't believe it. I can't believe it.
Marianne Rose was a financial analyst at a real estate firm. Age 54, she's single with a grown daughter. After being laid off with about 100 coworkers, she spent her savings, lost her home, and finally found herself sitting in a truck with her dog and all of her possessions. She made a desperate call to a friend and found refuge upstairs in the home of strangers, her friend's brother and sister-in-law.
How long did you think you would be in here?
2 weeks. Really? And that's all I thought.
How long has it been?
It's been 6 months. It's been 6 months and not really an end in sight yet.
What sort of things would you be willing to do at this point?
Well, I can say that the probably the lowest level position for me has been now to apply for a clerk, a county clerk, and I just realized that the competition's pretty stiff out there. There's actually 4 positions that were open. I found out there were over 2,000 people that applied for that those 4 positions.
Marianne Rose is one of at least 1.5 million Americans who've exhausted their unemployment checks.
99 weeks when unemployment benefits run out. We also have janitors with PhDs, an alternate breaking down why we're spending way too much on higher education, which one reminds me of School Sucks podcast, but also, of course, reminds me of PeaceRevolution.org breaking down how to educate yourself, how to teach yourself how to fish. Schools opening lockers to advertising. That's from StarTribune.com. U.S. falls in annual corruption survey. That's from the New York Times. And when we say fall, we mean we're more corrupt. So in a way, you could say we're rising the corruption list. The latest Russia Today appearance from Webster Tarpley on Tarpley.net. U.S. exporting depression to China. But what we want to switch to now is, again, a different addendum post by itself. We cover it on the latest New World next week. Federal Reserve printing more money and returning to Jekyll Island. CNBC reporting that the Federal Reserve launched a controversial new policy on Wednesday, committing to buy $600 billion more in government bonds by the middle of next year in an attempt to bring new life into a struggling economy. The decision, which takes the Fed into largely uncharted waters, is aimed at further lowering yada, yada, yada. Blacklistednews.com giving us 9 reasons why quantitative easing is bad for the U.S. economy. As if you didn't know. And in just a moment, we'll return to the scene of the crime. But first, let's try and expand on quantitative easing, or the catchier sounding QE2.
It's the Federal Reserve's big gamble. It's called quantitative easing, a fancy name for trying to boost the ailing U.S. economy. One day after elections that were all about cutting government spending, the independent central bank, the Federal Reserve, is out there doing just the opposite. It's buying up $600 billion in treasury bonds or government debt.
The Federal Reserve tried quantitative easing once before during the Great Recession of 2008. It spent $1.7 trillion between then and early 2010 in the hope of providing economic stability. Well, it had mixed success, but now the Federal Reserve is at it all over again.
Here's how it works. The Fed buys bonds or debt from the banks, providing them with cash to loan consumers. Buying so many bonds brings down already record low interest rates even further. It's hoped these low rates will push consumers to borrow more money or shop for a mortgage and stimulate the struggling economy. The move could weaken the already frail U.S. dollar and will make the U.S. government further beholden to international governments financing its debt. Will also mostly lead to higher domestic inflation as more currency is printed virtually out of thin air. So why is the Federal Reserve taking such risk?
Anytime you do a $1.5 trillion new experiment in a fragile economy, there's an element of risk, I think would be fair to say. The fact that we're going to add another $600 billion to that over the next three quarters of a year doesn't make that risk smaller, it makes that risk larger.
But as the Federal Reserve attempts to once again revive a sputtering economy, it's up to interpretation if the decision to print more money will hurt or help. Kimberly Helkin, Al Jazeera, Washington.
Skepticism clouds new U.S. stimulus plan, but let's return to the scene of this crime of fractional reserve banking, the scam, the creature from Jekyll Island. 100 years later, and they're back. Federal Reserve is going back to Jekyll Island to celebrate the 100-year anniversary of the infamous 1910 Jekyll Island meeting that spawned the draft legislation that would ultimately create the U.S. Federal Reserve. The title of this upcoming conference is A Return to Jekyll Island, The Origins, History, and Future of the Federal Reserve, and it is being held as we speak. Remember, the 5th and 6th of November in the exact same building where the original 1910 meeting occurred. In November 1910, the original gathering at Jekyll Island included U.S. Senator Nelson W. Aldrich, Assistant Secretary of the Treasury Department A.P. Andrews, and many reps from the upper crust of the bankster establishment. That meeting was held in an environment of absolute total secrecy. 100 years later, Federal Reserve bureaucrats will return to Jekyll Island once again to celebrate the history and the future of the Federal Reserve. Sadly, most Americans have no idea how the Federal Reserve came into being. It was a system designed by and for the bankers. Now the bureaucrats running the system are returning to Jekyll Island to congratulate themselves. Those attending the conference on the 5th and 6th include, of course, Bernanke, Greenspan, Goldman Sachs, Corrigan, and the heads of various regional Federal Reserve banks. You can view the entire agenda with a link right there for you. FRBAtlanta.org, the Federal Reserve Bank of Atlanta. Atlantis. Looks like there'll be plenty of hors d'oeuvres to go around, but should the Federal Reserve really be celebrating their accomplishments at a time when the U.S. economy is literally falling to pieces? Which brings to mind, should Obama-saya be running around as America's literally falling to pieces? For the best way to break down essentially the history of money, we'll always mention and always implore and always demand, essentially, that you go watch The Money Masters. Here's their quick breakdown on Jekyll Island.
The chairman was a man named Senator Nelson Aldrich from Rhode Island. Aldrich represented the Newport, Rhode Island homes of America's richest banking families. His daughter married John D. Rockefeller Jr., and together they had five sons. John, Nelson, who would become vice president in 1974, Lawrence, Winthrop, and David, the head of the Council on Foreign Relations and former chairman of Chase Manhattan Bank.
As soon as the National Monetary Commission was set up, Senator Aldrich immediately embarked on a two-year tour of Europe, where he consulted at length with the private central bankers in England, France, and Germany. The total cost of his trip alone to the taxpayers was $300,000, an astronomical sum in those days. Shortly after his return, on the evening of November 22, 1910, some of the wealthiest and most powerful men in America boarded Senator Aldrich's private rail car and, in the strictest secrecy, journey to this place, Jekyll Island, off the coast of Georgia. With the group came Paul Warburg. Warburg had been given a $500,000 per year salary to lobby for the passage of a privately owned central bank in America by the investment firm Kuhn, Loeb & Company.
Warburg's partner in this firm was a man named Jacob Schiff, the grandson of the man who shared the Greenshield house with the Rothschild family in Frankfurt. Schiff, as we'll find out later, was in the process of spending $20 million to finance the overthrow of the Tsar in Russia.
These three European banking families, the Rothschilds, the Warburgs, and the Schiffs, were interconnected by marriage down through the years, just as their American banking counterparts, the Morgans, Rockefellers, and Aldriches were. Secrecy was so tight that all seven primary participants were cautioned to use only first names to prevent servants from learning their identities. Years later, one participant, Frank Vanderlip, president of National City Bank of New York and a representative of the Rockefeller family, confirmed the Jekyll Island trip in a February 9, 1935 edition of the Saturday Evening Post.
I was as secretive, indeed as furtive as any conspirator. Discovery, we knew, simply must not happen, or else all our time and effort would be wasted. If it were to be exposed that our particular group had got together and written a banking bill, that bill would have no chance whatever of passage by Congress.
The participants came here to figure out how to solve their major problem, how to bring back a privately owned central bank.
Mission accomplished. That's just a touch, just a taste of the fantastic informational, educational, powerhouse 3.5-hour documentary, The Money Masters. The Creature from Jekyll Island. Our other related EconoCrash updates, initial jobless claims in U.S. climb more than forecast. That was from late last night from Bloomberg. But if you look today at the news, they're spinning it quite well. Employers add 151,000 jobs, most since May. A little spin for you. Indiana unemployment offices to add armed guards. This is from the IndyChannel.com. Indianapolis, Illinois. Indiana is going to actually, not just in Indianapolis, 36 other places. They're going to put armed guards. They're anticipating the holidays. They're anticipating the growing swarms of people who have been downsized and outsourced and poisoned and lied to and tricked. Not always through their own fault. We say goodbye to Pontiac. Yet another sign of how rapidly America's being deindustrialized. And this should put it into perspective. 2 weeks ago on NewWorldNextWeek.com, we noted the situation in France. Alternet.org, putting it right out there. France riots over pension reforms. Americans losing homes in record numbers. Yeah, we hardly protest. Bank of England chief Mervyn King proposes eliminating fractional reserve banking. That's from WashingtonsBlog.com. Imagine that. Cryptagon and others getting into the Fed, surpassing China as the top holder of U.S. debt by the end of November, with, again, funny money essentially out of thin air. There's a commercial about our national debt that's being banned by most major networks. It's actually all in Chinese, so you have to go check that out for yourself. I believe it's just simply titled Chinese Professor. Our last note on this post, Federal Reserve printing more money and returning to Jekyll Island. I discovered this morning while looking for creepy customers coming to MediaMonarchy.com, a huge thanks to Disinfo.com for posting this story on their front page. If you go to Disinfo.com right now, it's there on the front. Thanks to Disinfo.com. Thanks to my man Jeff from Redacted News. We're smack in the middle of a lot of ugly news, and we still have so much more geopolitics, history, mystery, holy hexes, media memes, Obama-Sia updates, tons and tons more. However, Let's take a quick break to remember, remember. Just a quick piece from Dario Marianelli's score for the provocative little piece known as V for Vendetta. As, of course, it is November 5th, 2010, my friends. My name's James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show, MediaMonarchy.com, and we're well into hour number two on this episode 193, and we're going to continue at breakneck speed getting into geopolitics. From allheadlinenews.com, Afghan president admits receiving bags of cash from Iran. And, of course, the CIA ghost of Osama threatened France on a new audio tape right before the U.S. elections. We'll get to some of the other news about Sarkozy as we travel back in time for what we like to call history mystery. And something we were going to go over in great detail last week as we were leading into U.S. midterm selections. Minnesota Public Radio, and again, WCCO.com, doing excellent digging in FOIA request filing on Paul Wellstone. It started with a fingerprint of a 25-year-old college professor who opposed the Vietnam War and ended with a search for his remains 32 years later. The FBI files on Paul and Sheila Wellstone, many of which are being made public for the first time, shed new light on the extent of the relationship between the FBI and the political activist who would go on to become a senator from Minnesota. Some of the information uncovered in the 219 pages was new to one of his closest confidants, former Wellstone campaign manager and state director, Jeff Blodgett. The files show that although the FBI initially took interest in Wellstone as part of the broader surveillance on the American left, the agency later served as his protector, investigating death threats the freshman senator received for his views on the first Gulf War, and in the end, helping sift through the wreckage of the fatal plane crash that killed Wellstone and seven others 8 years. 8 years ago. Wellstone's surviving sons declined to comment on these documents, which were obtained in response to a Freedom of Information Act request filed by Minnesota Public Radio News. So again, Minnesota Public Radio, as well as WCCO, FBI files on Wellstone give new details on the threats against him.
Today marks the 8th anniversary of the death of Senator Paul Wellstone and seven others in a plane crash. And new documents obtained by Minnesota Public Radio through the Freedom of Information Act show that Wellstone was under surveillance by the FBI long before he became a United States senator. Pat Kessler joins us now from St. Paul to tell us more. Pat, were you surprised by this?
Yeah, it was fascinating stuff, stuff I've never heard before. It shows these documents that the FBI had Wellstone under surveillance since 1970, when he was a Vietnam War protester. Many years later, FBI was investigating death threats against Wellstone as a U.S. senator. And the FBI investigated clearly, over time, deliberately, foul play in the Wellstone plane crash after it went down.
FBI agents from Duluth went immediately to the Eveleth crash site. They were on the scene as the rest of the world was learning of the tragedy.
A very sad moment that we have to report Senator Paul Wellstone aboard a small plane that crashed.
The documents obtained by Minnesota Public Radio show the FBI followed a number of criminal leads in the first 2 days of the investigation. Handwritten pages noted the initial search found no cockpit voice recorder and no bullet holes. The documents show an FBI evidence team searched the wreckage for 2 days, first looking for aircraft parts, then retrieving human remains and personal items. Among the claims the FBI investigated and dismissed, that the plane was shot down, the de-icing equipment was deliberately disconnected, and a death threat to Wellstone on the day before the crash.
Now, the National Traffic Safety Board later found there were no identifiable problems with the aircraft that crashed with Wellstone and all the others on it. It blamed pilot error, Amelia, and said that it was also dangerously low altitude and slow speeds that brought the plane down.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah.
Now, Pat, the crash happened just 11 days before the election,
yeah.
And there were a lot of conspiracy theories that were flying around back then.
You know, we heard those for months and even years, a lot of people wondering how this could possibly happen with the United States senator, his family, and campaign workers on board. As a matter of fact, a lot of people were suggesting back then that it was because of Wellstone's Iraq war vote. He was one of the few senators to vote against it. Those have pretty much been put to rest, but that back then, it was still really, really tough for a lot of people.
Yeah. All right, Pat. Thank you.
You got it.
Another October surprise. Another crash of convenience. There you have the Wellstone files. And we'll shift gears wildly while we're digging in the past of history mystery, because, of course, as we noted in that comment earlier on the rally, satire is quite valid social criticism, and, of course, no one does it so cuttingly like The Onion.
An archaeologist is tired of unearthing unspeakable ancient evils. This is Doyle Redland reporting. Archaeologist Edward Whitson had been looking for Bronze Age pottery shards in a recently unearthed Syrian ruin, but once again found himself fleeing giant flying demon cats, locked in a desperate struggle for his life and soul for what seemed like the thousandth time in his 27-year career.
Just once I'd like to clean up my work area without inadvertently conjuring up yet another tortured wraith or some other howling manifestation of an ancient god king's wrath. Blast it all!
Whitson hopes one day to excavate an ancient Egyptian monastery or marketplace without hearing the usual ear-splitting shrieks of the undead while being swarmed by green glowing carnivorous stink beetles. Doyle Redland for The Onion Radio News, online at theonion.com.
but seriously. CIA misconduct found in 2001 Peru plane crash. That's from the New York Times, and that's something I found while looking at the print edition of The Old Gray Lady while on break at work. And again, with my new Wi-Fi pod, I'm trying to tweet things more. And again, I implore you to check out twitter.com/mediamonarchy. And I wish we had time to get into this and the dirty details behind another CIA op. William Breaux, B-R-O-E, dead at 97. He helped oversee CIA efforts to oust Salvador Allende. You might know that as Operation Condor. You might recall that that essentially took place on 9/11/73. Indiana legislators want to defund the Kinsey Institute. Again, more eugenics. A little bit of good news. The West Memphis 3 to get a new hearing. Technicult.net reporting on that. And, of course, we'll just remind you to go get the essential story from the documentary film Paradise Lost. Ex-FBI agent says, of course, Oswald was a patsy. More on that from Dot Connector UK. A couple of notes coming from Shrub's forthcoming book, Decision Points. One, Bush thought about taking Cheney off the 04 ticket, but I'm sure, of course, Cheney said no. And Bush also notes that Kanye's Katrina comment was the lowest point of his presidency. One of the more amazing media moments of the last many, many years, and as we're thinking of V for Vendetta, and then the remake of the show V, and of course one of my favorite films is Pump Up the Volume, my favorite moments in the media are those moments when it goes unscripted, when reality breaks through and they don't know what to do. Do they cut away or they don't? It's amazing. And it's amazing and quite interesting that it doesn't happen more often. It seems Kanye West made his name being anti-authoritarian. Now, of course, if you follow the work of VigilantCitizen.com, you'll find a lot more sinister forces at work in the media industrial complex. We'll close out our history mystery notes with another interesting bit. I was completely unaware, and again, that's what makes all of this so fascinating. Stranger than fiction, my friends, but how do you know what's real and what's not when you have people planning propaganda news inside of the mighty Wurlitzer?
When most Americans open a newspaper, they expect all the news that's fit to print, not to plan. But declassified documents show that in the 1980s, the State Department was doing exactly that. Known as white propaganda, editorials and stories were planted and pushed in major U.S. media outlets, the Washington Post, CBS, USA Today, the New York Times, and more, ensuring favorable coverage of the controversial Contra War in Central America, techniques the CIA uses abroad to influence other populations and other governments.
The Office of Public Diplomacy had a very innocuous sounding name, but in fact it was a sinister, covert office running illegal propaganda operations.
Hello, my name is Otto Reich.
Meet the man at the forefront of this effort, Cuban-American Cold Warrior and former head of the Office of Public Diplomacy for Latin America. Reich has the reputation of a tough operator.
That's a lie. You are telling a lie.
Employing special psychological operations experts to craft messages for the American public.
Putting people secretly on the U.S. payroll, reporters, writers, and having them then pretend to be independent and writing op-ed pieces, and nobody would know that this was a U.S. government-financed and directed opinion. But from these declassified documents, we know that Otto Reich was behind these.
Similar tactics were used by the Bush administration in a lead-up to the Iraq War.
The Bush administration was trying to win the hearts and minds of the American public and the international community and create a reason to go to war in Iraq to overthrow the regime of Saddam Hussein.
The Iraq War is a textbook case of how a government or a cabal within a government uses propaganda, planting stories in the U.S. media to convert public opinion favorably toward a war. Within a matter of days, on September 8th, the New York Times, Michael Gordon, Judith Miller, published a front-page long story in which they talked about how U.S. intelligence officials had found out that
Saddam Hussein had purchased aluminum tubes, which they believed could only be used for nuclear weapons. What they did not say, of course, was that that was a minority view within the intelligence community.
The drums of war beat faster. The U.S. invaded in March 2003. In 2009, immediately after the president of Honduras was overthrown in a military coup, Otto Reich resurfaced in the mainstream media, quoted by columnists, interviewed by pundits.
Well, what I want to know about stuff like this, there's nobody else better to call on than the guy you're about to meet right here. He can better explain what is happening in Honduras than just about anybody else. Otto Reich is who I'm talking about.
Ever since he was in charge of what he was doing back in the 80s. And he's been around like a ghost. And you see him personally writing op-eds for important newspapers in the U.S. And you see him working behind the scenes for the coup-mongers in Honduras. And what you have to wonder is who's paying him to do so.
White propaganda has proven effective in garnering support for America's more contentious foreign policy.
The Office of Public Diplomacy became the sacrificial lamb of the Iran-Contra scandal following a congressional investigation. But Otto Reich moved on unscathed, first to become ambassador to Venezuela, then assistant secretary of state. He remains an influential consultant here in Washington, frequently quoted in the media, and regularly called to testify here on Capitol Hill as an expert witness. Keelan Ford, RT, Washington, D.C.
Oh, of course he's an expert witness. With a name like Otto Reich, it's got to be Nazi propaganda. Let's move quickly now through our holy hexes. We had to add a new subgenre to all the bizarre news relating to the religious wars raging. Clyde and I made a note of this last week. This article from BeliefNet.com: Do politicians need prayers? O'Donnell, Obama, and others say amen. Or amen. Christine O'Donnell said prayer impacted her polls. Apparently not enough. CNN asking if the Tea Party is becoming a religious movement. But let's follow up on a story we brought you as soon as the news broke. And again, this is the kind of story that's tailor-made for holy hexes. Satanist event in Oklahoma draws Christian protests.
What Almighty God. What you expected. Be God. People praying. Serpents in the Garden of Eden, Satanists walked among Christians. This woman began screaming, telling people to kill each other. Mom didn't know what to expect.
We just came to check it out. That's all. We don't really agree or disagree with either side.
Most of us have never seen a satanic ritual or exorcism, except maybe in the movies. A small group of Oklahomans showed up at the Oklahoma City Civic Center to witness a parody of one.
Not at the Civic Center. It happens every day all over the land, but not at the Civic Center. We have not.
The protest, I thought that that's ignorant for these people to do this. And what would Jesus do? Like, he'd just open the door and, like, show love, not come here and disagree and make an argument out of nothing.
Zacchaeus was in the tree. He didn't go criticize, like, all these people are doing. He came and talked to him and, like, was, like, a real person with him. And that's what changed him, not people protesting like this. It was by example.
James Hale says in the blasphemy ritual, the public would be allowed to see for themselves what's usually hidden. Except in this case, the doors were locked and people without tickets were not allowed inside. Something that doesn't bother the majority of people who prayed out front.
Satan has many tactics, but God gets all the glory no matter what.
This night, Christians carried signs, sang, danced, and prayed, sending a peaceful message. As one group congregates inside, another wants to be the light, guiding the way.
Oh, Satan works in mysterious ways, perhaps also in messing with that audio. We'll continue with our holy hexes from the copycat effect. Devil sighting causes 11 to jump from Paris window. Again, from copycateffect.blogspot.com. However, Reuters debunking the story. French satanic defenestration story thrown out the window. Reuters downplay satanic connections. More on that story will blow your mind. Mystery skulls mailed to BYU History Department. And meanwhile, a radio host and witch doctor try to curse LeBron James for leaving whatever city he left to go play for whatever team he now plays for. A little bit more selection news. Oklahomans vote against Sharia law. Things getting stranger by the moment, but BeliefNet.com has some fun facts about the election, about the statistics of what religion did what and how they voted. They also break down Obama's God gap. Many Americans are believers of ghosts and goblins, according to Faith World from Reuters. And more on the molestation that seemingly always surrounds homophobic televangelist. Atlanta pastor, in response to suits, denies sex allegations. Yet again. But now we move to our media and memes, and we'll blast through the old ones first before we get to the clip. And again, something Clyde and I referenced last week of this Sinister Forces stew. Actor Randy Quaid fears he's on a death list of stars. That initial report came from independent.co.uk. And oh, here he is again. Speak of the devil. VigilantCitizen.com. Kanye jokes about Illuminati rumors. A series of tweets from Kanye, basically making fun of all the things that have been pointed out, the symbolism in his videos and in his music. A series of tweets making fun of it all, saying, oh, how do I worship the devil on my iPhone? Or, well, did Satan like a droid or, iPod better? I think the fact that someone like Kanye has to address this, even in a joking manner again, shows on yet another front the success of the independent alternative media. Lady Gaga hits 1 billion YouTube views. That's from the BBC. Zombies invade New York City morning rush hour. That's from the News of the Weird from ClickToHouston.com. And I had been on quite the zombie movie marathon, revisiting the original Dawn of the Dead and checking out all the documentaries and the commentaries and watching some really interesting indie things that are available on Netflix. And again, I'll just whet your appetite with hopefully something coming in the near future concerning navigating Netflix and MediaMonarchy.com. Last of the Living from New Zealand and Zombies of Mass Destruction. But I digress. Fox may sue Cablevision as blackout continues. That's from DSLReports.com. Yes, there are TV wars a-raging, and unfortunately it mostly centers around, I want to watch my sports. Another interesting one I found while perusing the print edition of the New York Times, Jean-Luc Godard's honorary Oscar raises charges of anti-Semitism. He's going to get an honorary Oscar at the upcoming awards. However, he's not going to be there anyway. And a lot of folks are saying he's an old-school anti-Semite. I really don't know enough about the guy to comment any further. Lady Gaga course offered at University of South Carolina. That's from allgov.com. A new Grant Morrison documentary that we told you about a few weeks ago is now out. It's called Talking with Gods. There's also a new interview with Wired with Grant Morrison, creator of my favorite, The Invisibles, and all kinds of other stuff. Interesting note, filmmaker George Hickenlooper, cousin to the mayor of Denver, found dead. Award-winning director George Hickenlooper, cousin of Denver Mayor John Hickenlooper, was found dead last Saturday morning in an uptown Denver apartment where he was staying. The LA-based filmmaker was in Denver for the screening of his latest film. He was 47 and appeared to have died from natural causes. We don't see anything indicating that foul play was involved. This is a standard death investigation. George Hickenlooper's latest film, Casino Jack, stars Kevin Spacey. In an online statement on Deadline.com, Spacey said he was shocked by Hickenlooper's death. Interestingly enough, my friends, Casino Jack is all about Jack Abramoff. Could this be revenge? Let's close it out the way we started our media memes with something that, again, we've kind of giggled about on the surface, but something that warrants much more attention. And again, this is tailor-made for Media Monarchy, as we want to slowly veer more into in-depth studies of media and symbolism and semiotics and all of those things that I kind of know a little bit more about than all of the crazy geopolitics, but we'll have to slowly morph into that naturally. But this, again, folks, is tailor-made for MediaMonarchy.com. Let's listen to the entire statement that Randy Quaid gave to the media while seeking asylum, while escaping what he calls the Star Whackers.
All right, I'm going to read a statement, and afterward, I turn it over to my attorney, Catherine Sass, for any questions you may have. Help! That's not the same. For the past 20 years, my wife, Evie, and I have been the victims of criminal activities perpetrated by a small network of individuals who are out to destroy us personally, professionally, and financially. This network of individuals is manipulating the banking system and the criminal justice system for the purposes of sabotaging our credit and our credibility. Three of these individuals are Hollywood lawyers and a business manager, all of whom I hired 20 years ago to handle my legal and business affairs. They are Alan Wattenmaker, my former estate planner, Warren Grant, my former business manager, and Lloyd Braun, my ex-attorney. These three, along with a few others whose professional services I've engaged over the years, have conspired together to steal my property, my money, and with the aid of specific individuals at two major studios, Bruce Berman certainly being one, have gained access to my royalties revenue streams. These people have been able to do these things through the creation of a phony probate file, phony living trusts, secret bank accounts, fake loans, bogus corporations, smear campaigns, and false arrests of my wife and me. They have been aided and abetted in their schemes by the entertainment division of City National Bank's Roxbury branch in Beverly Hills. This particular branch is a major financial hub for the entire Hollywood industry. With the cooperation of certain individuals within City National's entertainment division, business managers, lawyers, and agents have been able to misappropriate my assets, life insurance policy, and royalties through various client trust accounts and bogus loans taken out in my name without my knowledge. The president of the bank's estate planning division told my wife that the bank prefers dead actors because they don't get in the way. These former employees of mine have further reached out to their relatives and contacts in Santa Barbara County to take civil disputes and turn them into criminal complaints against us. To be clear, we did not defraud an innkeeper, and we did not trespass on our own property. Up until a year ago, Evie and I had never had any run-in with the law whatsoever. We are not criminals, nor are we fugitives from justice, nor are we crazy. We are simply artists and filmmakers who are being racketeered on. We believe there are to be a malignant tumor of star whackers in Hollywood. How many people do you know personally who have died suddenly and mysteriously in the past 5 years? I have personally known 8 actors, all of whom I have worked with and was close to. Heath Ledger, Chris Penn, David Carradine, and Mike. I believe these actors were whacked, and I believe that many others, such as Britney Spears, Lindsay Lohan, and Mel Gibson, are being played to get at their money. In the meantime, many a celebrity's image and marketability is being co-opted and destroyed. Google helps out by keeping the negative stories near the top of the celebrity's webpage because it's the negativity that brings in the advertising revenue. In my own case, my ex-attorney Lloyd Braun has joined this tribe of bottom feeders by creating his own celebrity gossip website. What is wrong with that picture? When your own attorney starts defaming you, who do you turn to defend you? Lloyd Braun also claims to have come up with the idea of the Sopranos, so he's obviously familiar with the ways and means of organized crime. Unfortunately, my brother Dennis has made matters worse by buying a house from Mr. Braun on property Braun originally bought with money he embezzled from me. I recently discovered, much to my surprise, that Dennis is also on the deed to my Santa Barbara property. This is also the work of Mr. Braun, further confounding the validity of the transfer of my fully furnished property in 1992 to Mr. Bruce Berman. I have earned approximately $40 million throughout my career. I have profit participation in some of my films. I am being embezzled from by this monstrous ring of accountants, estate planners, and lawyers who are mercilessly slandering me and trying to kill my career, and I believe murder me, in order to gain control of my royalties. I wish to return to only one thing, work. For the past 40 years, I have successfully worked in Canadian productions, and I would like to announce my availability and desire to do so immediately, legally, of course. And now I'd like to turn it over to my brilliant and honest Canadian attorney, Catherine Sasper, for questions you may have. Where is he?
There you have it. There's the full press statement from Randy Quaid. And this is a fascinating story, and this is the kind of work that folks like Alex Constantine have done in his book, The Covert War Against Rock. This sounds like the precise scenario that befell someone like Michael Hutchence, lead singer of the band NXS, which opened this very episode. If there's any way anybody knows how to get in touch with him to further discuss this, please let MediaMonarchy@gmail.com. I'm in Portland. He's in BC. That's not too far away, and the phone call connects all, my friends. Again, we'll also remind you that Fritz Springmeier is rumored to have been released in a halfway house. I tried to call the Portland halfway house, and I wasn't able to discern whether or not Fritz Springmeier is there. I decided to go the honest route and say, hey, I'm a reporter who heard that this guy was there. Can I talk to him? I can't let you do that. So that's the rumor. And again, if anybody can help make these connections happen, do it. Quickly, murder and mayhem, crime, comeback, 12 statistics that make you wonder what's happening to the U.S., such as New York murder rate soaring, that's from canoe.ca, ex-soccer coach accused of sex assault found dead, and murdersuicide.blogspot.com on the death on Huff Mountain, West Virginia. Strange days indeed. We have another raft of Obamasiah Barry Satoru updates, and these are some of the things we touched on within NewWorldNextWeek.com and touched on last week with Clyde Lewis here in studio. American election devolves into brutality and fraud. That's from ofgoatsandmen.blogspot.com. Jack Conway tips off assistant prosecutor, that would be his brother, about being investigated by police for drug trafficking. Fortunately, Ron Paul just, or rather Rand Paul, and hopefully, fortunately, just defeated Conway. Stomping of Move On activists at Rand Paul event, a staged incident? White House media whores caught in the Rand Paul stomping cover-up. Connecticut judge, of course, said that fans could wear their wrestling garb to the polls, but fortunately, McMahon lost as well. Democrat election fraud openly running rampant. That's from CanadaFreePress.com. Touchscreens flipping votes in North Carolina from GOP to Dem. That's from MarkCrispinMiller.com. More about Obama on The Daily Show with John... What's the last name? I forget. His brother, you know, is the head of the New York Stock Exchange. Larry. Obama, of course, visiting India's tech sector while our economy here at home crumbles. Obama administration using Ashcroft Supreme Court case to advance White House immunity. Again, carrying the football on. Never investigating the previous criminals. We have to move forward. A Citizens United conspiracy. Were Supreme Court justices involved? Technorati.com getting into massive conflict of interest. We have Tarpley's full address to the anti-Obama rally on the U.S. Capitol going back to October 23rd. We have the Portland Indy Media photos of the Obama protest when Barry Satoru was here stumping for John Kitzhaber, who did win his third term. It's kind of like a second marriage here in Oregon. But the protest photos are there, and again, so much more swirling around Barry Satoru and Obamasiah. But as long as we're talking about Oregon and Portland, we have a few bizarro Oregon oddities that again bring us back to just the air drama. Box cutter blades found on flight from Portland from Tokyo. NationalTerrorAlert.com, of course, amplifying that story. Portland to Dallas flight diverts to Utah for an unruly man. That's from StatesmanJournal.com. And interestingly enough, from Threat Level, cops pay $4,000 to an Oregon man who flipped them off. now an ugly police state run. U.S. spy budget tops $80 billion a year. That's from allgov.com. And again, if you want to bellyache about all the GOP took over because what? These fake progressive puppets were somehow curtailing the military media industrial complex? Biometric devices help New Jersey County track delivery of homeless services. Epic privacy group demands immediate halt of the naked body scanners. We, of course, have prison stocks making money off the prison industry. We do have a clip, but we're running out of time, so we'll skip it. But it's there for you. Again, our growth industries are Terra Nova and prisons. And as we see a lot of these situations that seem to mimic one event to the other, these massive drills or patsies or stings, compartmentalized intelligence operations, we don't know. We can just follow, or as our critics would say, we're anomaly hunting. Arizona man arrested after guns found in his truck at the National Mall. That's from late last night. FBI says DC shooter could be a Marine. Clyde and I noted this story last week because it was breaking on Google News. Lauren Coleman of Copycat Effect called it the geometric shooter. So we asked the question, oh, could it be a Marine? Oh, God, could the sky be blue? C4 seized in Colorado in a Navy SEAL-connected smuggling case. That's from the Associated Press. And again, false flags fly all around the world unless we expose them. Newspaper bomb threat traced back to the Swedish police. And digging deeper into police state updates, going back to the post, Dark Memories of a Nazi Future, activist post getting into martial law, economic meltdown, and executive orders, and the ugly barrel we're staring down, unless we incite a revelation. New piece from CorbettReport.com on the whistleblower Eric Schein on his insider knowledge of Coast Guard implementing martial law. Top 100 items to disappear first during a national emergency. That's from Before It's News, which will remind you carries all the full feeds of the Media Monarchy Kingdom. BeforeIt'sNews.com. Body scanners unveiled at JFK. And of course, Napolitano doesn't go through them herself, doesn't volunteer, won't do it. It's for you. Invisible DNA body spray technology may soon be installed at a business near you. That's from naturalnews.com. DHS conducts nationwide ID authentication test for emergency preparations. That's from terradaily.com. Intelligence spending, as we noted from the more recent headline from AllGov, sources back to this Walter Pincus piece from the Washington Post. Intelligence spending at record $80.1 billion in first disclosure of overall figure. CIA FBI agents sent to art museums to hone their observation skills. They need to stare at Monet paintings so they can learn how to detect any threatening behavior coming from you if you don't like being treated like a slave at the airport. Rocket launcher recovered in alleged plot to attack the Dayton VA Center. More on that from DaytonDailyNews.com. Fed search Massachusetts home of missile systems expert. I believe he's connected to Raytheon. Man arrested for trying to bomb D.C. subway stops. This was the other pre-election Terra Nova threataganda that was shoving down our throats. Have a clip for this, but again, we're running too short on time to go into that foiled or faked FBI entrapment tactics fueling homegrown terror. But as we see these events break, whether it's the underwear bomber or the Times Square bomber or this toner terror or this DC bomb plot, it always just somehow seems to coincide with measures that were already quietly announced to be introduced. They were going to roll out the naked body scanners. They just needed an event to make you like it. However, let's take one last stroll down bad memory lane. covert FBI war against Americans leaves dark memories. That would be the counterintelligence program, better known as COINTELPRO.
Buried in the shadows of America's history books, an era known to its victims as America's Dirty War, a war against its own citizens. It's been 54 years since the FBI launched a covert war against political dissidents, the counterintelligence program, more infamously known by its acronym, COINTELPRO.
All the people don't have freedom, all the people don't have justice, and all the people don't have power, so that means none of us do.
The Black Panther Party, the American Indian Movement, anti-war organizations, even civil rights leaders and Hollywood stars. The list of targets was endless. Fueled by the frenzied paranoia of McCarthyism and the growth of radicalism, the objective of COINTELPRO was simple: undermine and destroy popular movements by any means.
Infiltration, destabilization.
The Brown Beret, we were victims of agent provocateurs, police infiltration. They tried to incite our members to go and commit acts of violence.
As the black nationalist movements gained traction nationwide, it also gained the FBI's attention.
They labeled the Black Panther Party as public enemy number one.
And the promising young leader Fred Hampton, a target.
When I leave, you remember I said, with the last words on my lips, that I am a revolutionary.
Hampton was shot to death in his apartment. He was 21 years old.
If you take Fred Hampton, it was out-and-out murder, direct murder. If they can't misdirect him, they just kill him. That's the rule. That's the history of the United States government.
American Indians are becoming militant, demanding the government take action to help solve their problems of poverty and discrimination.
At the site of the 1890 Wounded Knee Massacre, the American Indian Movement held the government at gunpoint. The FBI moved in immediately. Dennis Banks was an AIM leader.
The suspicion was starting to rise after we realized what they were doing to the Black Panthers. And we had a series of meetings, the American Indian Movement did, saying, look, we've got to be aware that there's a great possibility that they might be, you know, targeting us for infiltration.
A reign of terror soon gripped the Pine Ridge Reservation in South Dakota. Over 60 AIM members were murdered. Others were dragged through the courts. Like Leonard Peltier, imprisoned for murdering two FBI agents. But some suggest the evidence and witnesses were flawed, corrupted. Today, to many, he's America's foremost political prisoner.
We'll cut it short there, my friends, again, as we're running short on time. Just, again, a way to sort of whet the appetite for the amount of information laid out for you. That was from Russia Today, Covert FBI War Against Americans Leaves Dark Memories. And from dark memories to a possible Nazi future, former Hitler Youth whistleblower and World War II veteran Hilmar von Kamp, warning of the road that we're on. And that's always the question. How could they not see it? It's the slow, incremental turn-up of the heat. Our last Police State International note is, again, another fantastic clip we don't have time for. It's called Shobama and the Joint Chiefs, really breaking down the military structure and the Joint Chiefs. And this is from betterbadnews.com. A great site I just discovered. Subscribe to the video feed. It's well done. Think of it like Onion videos, but with a much more hardcore stance. We'll close out with the War Whores. With antiwar.com, Justin Raimondo writing and asking the question, whatever happened to the anti-war movement? Were they at that rally for sanity? Obama administration ignored torture warnings and transferred detainees to Iraqi authorities. More on that from allgov.com. Paul Joseph Watson getting into what we've only briefly touched on throughout this episode, the boogeyman of Al-Qaeda. Again, if you believe, even if you believe the official stories of these events, you know that Al-Qaeda was the database of Mujahideen fighters funded and trained as part of, among other things, Operation Cyclone, connecting Brzezinski and Gates, and all the characters that are still around today, guys who know how to stir up an insurgency. That's why the DOD printed up textbooks training in violence. U.S. to build 8 billion, well, that's in euros, and it's from the Telegraph, a super base on the Pacific island of Guam. And strangely enough, from Danger Room, this could have fit into our occult holy hexes. Air Force Academy now welcomes spellcasters. NewsJunkiePost.com getting into runaway military spending does not equal fiscal responsibility. Again, calling the lie of both parties. And as Carol Quigley said in Tragedy and Hope, with the connected Council on Foreign Relations families, that we're given the idea that we can vote the bums out, and yet it all still moves along apace. I think the return to Jekyll Island illuminates a lot of what we're talking about here. As does this. U.S. military uses more oil per day than the entire nation of Pakistan. So if you want to talk environmental, let's end the war. Lockheed Martin awarded high-power microwave energy weapon contract. More on that from DefenseTalk.com. And that's a rather disgusting way to close out all our postings on MediaMonarchy.com. We'll take a quick glance and again remind you that with my new slave device, my Wi-Fi pod, we're using Twitter.com/MediaMonarchy a hell of a lot more, retweeting and posting so many more things. So huge thanks to Create a Conspiracy, The Historian, even folks like Billy Corgan and Sylvester Stallone making interesting tweets about Manchurian candidates. We also have Hillary meeting Netanyahu next week. Oh, and let's plant this meme out there. Make Ron Paul the Speaker of the House. And from just a few hours ago, Drudge Report reporting bag of uncounted ballots found in Bridgeport. Again, thanks to PortlandRadioAuthority.org for bringing you MediaMonarchy.com now for over 4 years, Friday mornings at 10 a.m. Pacific Time. Thanks for the kick out worldwide, ZeroPointRadio.com. Thanks to the folks over in the chat room right now. Thanks to RevereRadio.net and all of those folks out there who help make all of this possible. Again, your support helps keep alternative media going. I appreciate your donations and your news tips and all those things. That's as simply as I can say, thank you. My name's James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show, MediaMonarchy.com, reminding you, as always, my friends, don't hate the media, become the media. Take care.
MediaMonarchy.com is your source for alternative news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups. Featuring weekly radio shows on the Portland Radio Authority, PRAradio.org, the World Next Week video series with CorbettReport.com, plus special interview episodes, B-sides, mixtapes, and so much more. Send news tips to MediaMonarchy@gmail.com. You can make a donation or mail Media to the Monarchy at P.O. Box 12165, Portland, Oregon 97212. Thanks to all the internet and community radio stations who broadcast these shows, and most of all, thanks to you. Remember, don't hate the media, become the media.
Whether he went on with the diary, or whether he did not cooperate, made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.